Peanut butter jelly.
Taking a ride on the Freedom Train Podcast Series. I'm your host, Joseph Ward, and as always, ride with me is my big homie, Mr. Patrick Earth. And remember, the Freedom Train is brought to you by PAX Inc., and that's PACTSINC. And PAX Inc. is a black development organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. And for all our new listeners, make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org, where they have a wealth of knowledge. And you can check the code of conduct, learn more about the organization, how to become a member, how you can donate, how you can get involved. And if you hover your mouse over the More tab, you're going to see a drop-down box that says Learning Center and More. Learning Center and Store. If you hover your mouse over the Learning Center, got all these resources that come up that you can use. So once again, that's www.pactsinc.org. And also, while you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. That way you can learn more about me, learn more about Pat, the Enigma Sep Hour, Lessons from the Screen, the Fix Sports Podcast, and everything that we got going on. And remember, it's May, so every May we do our Black Women Celebration because we love our black women, and we want to make sure that we show them through our actions that we love them more than just saying that. So make sure you all go to our website, www.freedomtrainradio.com, click on that tab that says Black Women Celebration, go learn about these women that we're celebrating, and support them, because that's why we do what we do. What up, Pat?
Yo, first off, standard, got to cover this, customary. You need to make a checklist, because that's too long. Second off, I appreciate you trying to body shame me, homie.
How I body shamed you?
Because you said I was your big homie. That's body shaming.
Okay. Well, you a little homie.
Nope, that's
still body shaming.
Yes.
Well, you're a physical being in this physical world.
That's still body shaming. I don't feel like being physical, nothing.
You want to be an entity?
I am a mass of non-tangible particles.
Some gas particles or something?
No, non-tangible, bro. No, so now I'm poo gas?
I mean, it has meaning behind it. It has fire behind it.
Who you know poo gas got fire on?
Hey, if you light a match. You ain't, man. Look here, man. You all out of line. Don't come at me like that, Pat. You don't know me like that.
Look, I was finna rap, and you wouldn't let me rap.
You weren't finna rap. You say that every week. You know you weren't finna rap.
I was fixing the rap pooty tang.
No, you weren't.
All right, who we got today, Joe?
See, yeah, because you tripping, though. I'm going to have to drop a diss song. I got a diss song recorded for you. I'm going to drop
it. Hey, man, I got a diss song on. I already dropped two of them, Mr.
You You did drop a diss song. That's how I know we really ain't friends. Did you drop? You actually dropped a diss song on me.
I'm KRS-One minus the money, the history, and the skills. I got diss tracks for everybody.
Oh, okay. All right. Whatever. But just know one coming. Just know that.
Word.
So today we have a young lady who, in my opinion, is the epitome of what an artist is, right? Mm-hmm. She uses dance as a means to empower our community and to get others involved and learn more about our African history, our African culture. Her name is Geatricia Head. She's a dancer. She's a choreographer. She's a teacher, she's a director, she's a lover of life, a lifelong learner. She is using her platforms to uplift and empower not only the black women in our community, but the black men and everybody who she touches within our community. So what I want everybody to do to get up and put your hands together one time for Ms. Geatricia Head. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you for being here on this Freedom Train podcast with us.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. Thank you for being here.
How you guys doing? Greetings.
No, we good. We excited. Pat, you ready? You learn how to dance? Because I'm a two-step champion. And Pat can't dance. He ain't got no,
oh,
he ain't got no rhythm.
Nah, bro. I was the on the dance team in the third grade.
Oh,
what
okay.
kind of dance? Like the Strikers?
Nah, we was better than the Strikers.
It was a Striker in the third grade.
It was the third grade. You know, we had whole dance routines and uniforms. Mm. We was doing it, man. You know. Hey, so I got a question.
I hope so.
Okay.
Don't say that because, look, our interviews are more like conversations. So sometimes
mm-hmm.
we'll just make statements and see what you, how, you know, like, because it's a conversation. It ain't really an interview.
That's cool.
So
that's
when I
cool.
have a question, sometimes I announce it, and Joe always makes me feel bad because he's a horrible person. But
I guess I'm question shaming.
I don't think
you
he's
now.
A horrible person.
No, he's horrible. He's a horrible, awful person. Anybody that's been listening to the show over the past few years will agree with me that Joe is just
whatever.
A despicable human being.
You know what? I've met Joe in my, okay, I'm not taking sides, Pat, in my experience of meeting Joe, he's a very warm-hearted, good-spirited person. So I haven't met him on any other platform. And I know that you two may be more familiar with each other, but maybe, you know what, maybe we could set up something because dance also helps remedy, you know, conflict, you know, between
like
friends.
Like they used to do in the 80s.
Family. Yeah, you dance it off. You do a dance off. So, I mean, Pat, I'm just only giving, and my apologies because I know you had a question, but I wanted just to make sure that I could actually beat you with an idea that could help, you know, override your discomfort and some of the issues that you were having with Joe.
Because he came down.
So both of y'all are just going to tag team me and call me a
yes.
Yes,
because you can't dance. Ask your question.
I will tag team you. I won't do it.
Y'all just
I think you're a great
me?
Person too, Pat. You're a great person.
No. So this question though, so like you know I alluded to, you know dancing is a part of our culture, and I used to be a fabulous dancer in the third grade. Back when everybody thought they could dance, back before your peers were honest with you and told you you couldn't. But so I'm always interested to meet people that continue to dance into adulthood and into especially those that do it in front of people that aren't friends and family. How did you fall in love with dancing? Like what about your life or anything that happened that got you to get to that point where you were like, you know what, I really like to do this and I want to do it professionally?
Oh well, Pat, let's see. I guess to begin with, like, I will say I was one of those children. If you want to talk about someone who was incredibly introverted and shy, I mean, incredibly shy. I am that girl. I was that girl. I mean, I was small, tiny, so I would find the tiniest places to hide when people would come over, underneath the couch, in a closet. It was I think, you know, nowadays psychologists would probably, you know, try to label that or something. I don't know. But it was just me really, to an extent, either afraid of people or just incredibly shy and not wanting to be around people so much. So I spent a lot of time by myself. But one thing I was really, really intrigued by was music, song, and dance. And my family is a very musically inclined family. Like, my mother sings, she dances. She's never really took it on a professional level. But even nowadays, she teaches line dancing in the community. And my sisters, they all play instruments. And so I was always hooked on what they were playing. I would try to play them myself and even do keyboard. I was doing everything, keyboard, flute. I taught myself guitar, piano, all of that I was doing because of my interest in the music. But I never grasped onto that as fast as I did dance. So my oldest sister taught. She was she learned dance growing up, and she always loved to dance. So for family reunions, she would always do these routines and have us do these routines over and over. You know, teach us something new. And I remember a little closer towards 8 or 9 years old. That's when I got really involved into dancing, really involved into the routines, and actually catching on to how she would make and choreograph. And I was like, oh, I can do that too. So I would do it with my cousins and stuff, and then when I got to school, I would do it with a couple of the friends and stuff. But the thing with school, like once I got into middle school, I was still a bit shy with doing that. So I would say, like, my love, really just to go back to what grasped my interest was that. My older sister, she exposed me to many different sounds of music and the arts. On TV, there was a channel called A&E. Do y'all remember that? Mm-hmm. Arts and Entertainment?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, when I know now it's a different thing, but when it first came out, and especially during the 80s, there were a lot of arts videos, like dance videos and music videos, dealing with opera, many of the European classical arts, so ballet, the orchestras, the opera singers, all of these videos would play on there, and I used to love watching it. And then Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker, that used to be one of my favorite ballets to watch. And I was like, oh, I wanna be a ballet dancer. I wanna dance like the dancers at the American Ballet Theater, you know, ABT. So I would try to teach myself ballet. I would be in the living room watching on TV and trying to, you know, fix my feet to go into turnout and try to learn what I thought I knew. You know, I was just mocking. Didn't know that these were positions and there was a technique. I had no idea. and that was mainly the building blocks. You know, my family, my mother, my mother and my older sister, they probably were my biggest influences in exposing me to dance and allowing me to really embrace that in different ways and in the ways they introduced it to me.
Oh, that's cool. That's real cool because honestly, I was expecting you to say that you was one of the people dancing before you walked because we often hear that, but you were
You know what? You know what, Joe? Actually, I didn't walk till I was 2 years old, and I was actually dancing. You're right. So there was an Apple Jacks commercial that would come on, and he was like, Teresa, you know, you ask my parents, they like, yeah, when that commercial came on, Teresa would crawl, and she would stand up to the TV, and she would dance to the Apple Jacks commercial. Apple Jacks, like, that was it. And that, I mean, so yes, before I walked, yeah, I was dancing.
Right, but you still were introduced by your sister and being able to see other people doing dance, and that kind of that more so inspires you.
Yeah, but I didn't actually get technical training until I got into high school. So a lot of people are surprised by that because when I came into, there was a dance program happening at Gabi, and it was like, hey, you should go, you know, there's this dance. I was like, what? There's an actual dance program? Okay, I'll be there. And I volunteered because it was too late to be a part of the concert. And so I volunteered, and then I spent the summer working with a teacher. Her name was Cheryl Wimberly. And I, you know, developed a very, very close relationship with her in terms of her teaching me and mentoring me, you know, through that. And you know, just to bring that out too, that may have been the most pivotal point in in introducing me to, you know, dance in a way that you know, that you, that would either make or break me, but it definitely like made me.
Okay. Okay. And so, so you would say that as far as real instructions to get you technique and everything that was, that molded you to the dancer you are today, kind of started at Gotti.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely started in high school. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I thought that it was a little late for me, but later in time I've come in contact with professional artists who are definitely out there, who had very, you know, what people would call late starts into the dance field. And so it basically led me to believe, you know, you don't, it's not about how early you start, more about what you are committed to doing. And some of us just have our intelligences, you know, for this are higher than others. But in the arts, it, there's no, like, set algorithm as to when you should start learning, because everyone has different time periods for whatever the arts, whether it's visual, performing. You know, many people can be late bloomers or early starters. It doesn't matter. Yeah.
Okay.
Did you excuse me, Joe? Because I know you're fixing this. But so when you were teaching yourself how to dance, I try to speak like I got some sense for once. Did you teach yourself anything that you had to unlearn when you go through professional? Did you jack yourself up?
No. No, 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 no. And again, it's kind of like, you know, when I'm teaching a class, I talk about kinesthetic intelligence and kinesthetic learning. So for me, kinesthetic learning, it you know, I have a higher sense of grasping things in terms of movement information, the way people or things are moving. And then also what's happening musically, also what's happening in the spatial environment. All of those things are happening all at one time to help me get the information I need and mimic what I see. So a lot of times, you know, but I think a lot of us as Black people, you know, and Pat, maybe even you, you know, you were able to watch something and a movement, whatever, and mimic that movement right away.
Mm-hmm.
And so growing up, that's what we did. I would get videos, and I would record music videos or whatever, and then I would mimic those dances, picking up on vocabulary, and then I could take some of that vocabulary, and I said, oh, what if I did this with it or did that with it, you know, and then start evolving that into my own, you know, and developing my own signatures and different things like that. So before I got the training, a lot of that was about, you know, a lot of what I did was picking up information that I was seeing on TV, you know. And then eventually I had this, you know, once I started getting training, I could plug in some of that information. And then it strengthened what I already knew. But I knew how to stretch my body and train my body to stretch. So there was a sense of flexibility already in place, you know, when I was learning those things, and it just enhanced it. So, yeah, in no way did I mess myself up.
Nope.
I was a tall boy, too. So, I mean, the stuff I used to do outside was a lot more dangerous than I did when I was stretching. You know, well, actually, no. There could have been some things that could have really injured me. But
right.
I think I was pretty good at determining what, how far I needed to go. You know, what my lane was.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And so moving from you starting at Gotti and moving forward, you've had a number of mentors, because, you know, being able to look at your background information, you were mentored by a number of people who are prominent in the dance world. So can you give us, you know, your experiences with your mentors and how they kind of helped shape you to become the dancer that you are today?
Okay. Without, like, becoming extremely long-winded because I've learned so much. But I can say that with those who were models and influencers and inspiration to shaping my development as an artist, I can say that many of the dancers and instructors that I was blessed to come in contact with taught me the skills of being my best. Just really taught me the skills of being my best. There were a lot of times I would walk into auditions and I was really nervous about not making it, you know, or being turned away. And that was because I was like short, I was very small, and I was just like, you know, I'm not like some of these tall dancers, you know, with long arms and different things like that. Mm-hmm. So you know, a lot of times I there was just a nervousness about how I would, you know, be seen and if someone would see me. And so most of the time, a lot of my work was on the sidelines. I would always just pick up the vocabulary right off, right there, and they would see me. And then that was one pattern I noticed in terms of me making the cuts for a lot of auditions. There was one audition I was so intimidated by that I didn't do it. And the artist, when he came back, his name was Marshall Romain, and when he came back for the actual show that we did, he got to see me dancing, and he said, he got me, you know, in a point where I was there with him, and he was like, so why didn't you audition for my piece? And I was like, I had to go out of town. And I did. I really did have to go out of town. Yeah. But the other part, too, was I was afraid. Again, the shyness. I was able to dance out onto the stage, but there were, the shyness would still come out in different areas, especially when it came to auditioning. So auditioning became something I had to really fight past, like say, okay, don't be attached and don't take it personal. You go out there and you do your best. You learn and you grow, and everywhere you go, there's a lesson with it, you know. So at first, it was a lot of there was a lot of intimidation, but I know with him, there was just that idea of him, you know, saying, you know, don't, like, basically don't hide yourself, you know, have the confidence within yourself to do what you need to do, and that was one of the main things I learned from my mentor. My other one of the other mentors is Dr. Joan Hamby Burroughs. She was the artistic director for orchestras at FAMU.
Okay.
And first time I went to her, you know, I was very excited. I was like, oh, their program, okay, my name is Giltricia, blah, 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 blah. And she's like, oh, okay. You know, it was nothing grand. And so I just kept coming around. And I can't even tell you what made me just keep coming around, but I did. I just was I just kept coming around. And even in the auditions, I didn't make like the top dancers in that group. But I just kept being there. I kept working. I kept doing everything. And then I was. And what it came out to was that she realized how dedicated I was. And so from there, you know, I would stay after rehearsal. It'd be past midnight. But she had so many stories about being a civil rights activist, about being a dancer, you know, being an artist and being a civil rights activist, doing all of these multiple areas of things, and a researcher. She was also a researcher. And the stories she had was just numerous. And you just sit there and listen, like, what? Is that what you did? Wow, you know. And little did I know that these were jewels that I could continue to pick up on and think about in my own life in certain situations that I would come about with. So, you know, I think it was like a lot of the stories that I would learn and encounter. And then my exposure just to artists that were, you know, great legendary artists, and I got a chance to be around them and meet them and, you know, and dance and them see me dance. And that's a humbling experience, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, you Jean Leon Destiné, Elio Pommier, like, these are people, you look them up and you know their impression that they have made, in especially in the history of black dance making. So yeah, though, just to give a brief
layout. That's good stuff.
Yeah.
So ultimately, to help you, because I know you, it's still a process to get past your shyness, even though you may be advanced, it's still a process sometimes. So, but ultimately, you pushing yourself and just keep pushing yourself is what helped you get past being that introvert who was shy to take those extra steps.
Yeah, definitely. Just pushing. There were, you know, there was just real honest question. Well, what real things I just had to realize. One thing, though, I think that started to help me was it was because I couldn't really see. I have extremely horrible vision, like really, really bad vision. And basically, because of my vision, I couldn't see anybody when I got on the stage.
Right.
You know, I could see what I needed to do. I had a sense of where I was on the stage, but I couldn't see. So I just danced. And that, I didn't think about who was watching and what was going on. But then after all of that, if it was recorded, I just wanted to see what that was. Like, oh, how did I look? You know, and then once I got into college, the anxiety came again, but then it was just kind of like, okay, little by little I got used to it. Little by little I had to open up and be okay with this moment, these moments of vulnerability and being open in a different way among people, you know. And that dance definitely broke me out of my shyness, like my ability to do things, because now I can speak. I do all of these speaking engagements and dancing and da-da-da-da and teaching, you know, and you wouldn't know from that if I ever had that kind of issue. But it was, like, severe. There's, like, one little issue I have still with shyness. I'm not going to talk about it, but it's still there. And I just feel, you know, but other than that.
Like that?
Yeah, I do. I had to.
So what's the issue? Because I was going to ask, because you don't hear a lot about, well, I don't hear a lot, not like I'm sitting here like I interview dancers every week. But I when you said that you were concerned about being short, I was like, I was just thinking, I don't think I've ever really heard a woman say that. I hear a lot of dudes saying it, but I don't think I've ever heard a woman speak
in,
go ahead.
Mm-hmm. I was just, I didn't want to cut through, but no, I was just going to say, in the dance world, you'd be surprised because of the fact, the isms of, or the body or the frame of the dancer, the ideal dancer. You know, it's like the framework of almost like a model. So when we talk about models, it was the shortest female model. You know, she's probably maybe 5'5", maybe at that height. And when we talk about professional modeling. So when you talk about dancers in the professional world, you do have some companies that are looking for a height specific. And if you fall below that, you know, you probably are a great dancer, but if they're looking for a height, they're going to reference that. Same thing as weight, you know, which has been something that, because the framework of dance companies are changing, and that the way people are making and developing their groups are a lot more innovative. So, and they're more diverse or versatile in the people, in the backgrounds and races and different things like that. So you're looking at different bodies dance, And there's more conversation about the bodies that dance. See, they have to be this and that and that and that, you know. So you don't have so much of what you had before, but it's still there. It's still a conversation. We still talk about it because it's a serious conversation. You know, a lot of dancers, there have been dancers that have, you know, deal with food disorder, eating or, you know, self-confidence in different ways because they're told that they don't have the right framework. They're not tall enough or they're not this or they got to be skinnier, you know. But it's like ballet dancers, they have so much muscles. You don't expect them to be that skinny, you know, based on what they do, you know. They build a lot of muscle, and dancers build a lot of muscle. So I think there's more attention to that idea of self-care. But if you come into the dance world and you listen to the conversation, you will hear everything probably because of the sensitivity of these artists about height, about weight, about look, you know, even hair, you know, these are so many, so much about the visual comes into conversation in these areas, in these field of work. Right. Yeah.
And when you say that, it actually makes sense. It does make sense with the visual aspect of a dancer, but you have also teased us very naughtily, might I add. So what's this other hang up that you have? I'm not very linguistically beautiful, so I just gotta say it.
I don't know. It's like, okay, so it has nothing to do with the profession. It's just a social aspect. I could be so I think that's what it is. So for me, is being socially, I still deal with certain parts of being socially inept. And some people may think that I'm not trying to speak to them. And I want to make that public because sometimes I think people think that I am not trying to speak, but it's like sometimes I don't even know how to initiate that conversation, you know, depending on certain people. And as a dancer, sometimes I'm like, oh, I wish people could just understand my body language, you know, because around dancers you can do that, and then they know right off what's going on. But, like, with everyday people, it's like, okay, I have to initiate some type of talking, and then anxiety flares up, like, okay, will I say the right thing? Will they accept it? Will they hear me? You know, will I say something stupid?
Right.
So,
right.
You know, that's always like, that's one of my things that I'm still working on.
Oh, I can relate to that totally.
Yeah, we all can.
Yeah.
No, it's just, mine can get really, really awkward. I'm working on timing and, you know, how to make that right, you know. So.
I feel you.
And recognizing people. Sometimes I have a problem recognizing people, and they think that I'm just not saying hey, and I'm like, don't recognize your face.
It's like that sometimes. Because a lot of times with the social media and things, people look different in real life than they do on social media.
Exactly.
Or I could just be so focused on what's on my mind or what I'm doing that I don't see you. And so it's just like people not taking that personal, but I understand where you're coming from. I know with me, I could either go in the room and be the life of the party or go in the room and nobody know I was there. And so
Oh my gosh, that's me too. You know, are you a Pisces? No?
Well, no, I'm a Capricorn. I've been my personality, though.
I saw you.
Sometimes I'm out, but I don't feel like being on. So,
yeah.
I'm there with you, and I've actually been accused of being, even my mom says that I'm probably autistic, but I am a Pisces, so.
You're a Pisces?
I am.
Yay!
Pisces.
Give him a hand.
You back cool now.
I'm on your. That's. But I told him I was on his side, and he didn't believe me, and now he knows I'm a Pisces. So yeah, now you really know I'm on your side.
Right.
Right?
So we here with it.
Yeah. Yeah, Pastor, don't think I'm against you. I'm only trying to do what we Pisces do, and that's be diplomatic and try to see both sides of the situation, you know? That's all.
Well, but I'm right there with you, though. It is, people are weird. I can't tell you how many times I might call Joe up, and Joe does it to me, too, so I think he can, but I might call him up out of the blue and be like, yo, what's wrong with people, man? And I'll lay out a scenario, and, you know, both of us will sit there and kind of be, because this whole thing I'm doing right now, like, this is a character. If you met me in the streets, this isn't what you get at all, if you got anything at all, because I might kind of look at you, and you'd be like, well, is he looking at me or is he looking through me? And I'm looking at you, but I'm not fully present either. So don't. Anyways, I understand what you're saying. I get you. So
that's great.
We need to start a support group.
I know, right?
We could do a support group. You guys just let me know what you want, you know.
Gotcha.
But, you know, I've been doing a lot. I'll just, you know, figure it out, because a lot of times I find myself having to speak around a lot of people, and I still deal with the whole introvertedness. Like, it becomes an energy drainer, you know, especially talking and, you know, in front of people and new people and saying, hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing? Da 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 da. Like that. I don't know why. It just, you know, it drains, even though I don't mind doing it. I love being around a lot of people. From time to time.
After these shows,
draining.
I have to take a nap.
You have to take a nap? You be trying that hard to do it.
I'm not social at all. I'm a hermit. I sit up. Joe call me up and be like, what you doing? And I'll be like, yo, I was reading this amazing nerd book on whatever nerd subject I'm reading on, because I'm a nerd and proud of it. What of it? Fight me. Anyway.
Okay.
And,
aggressive
but
nerd.
No, I'm with you. I am. So what do you do to get over that? I mean, I know you dance and whatnot, but what steps are you taking? I'm asking for advice for me now. What steps are you taking to overcome those?
No problem, my fellow brother in Pisces. So, a lot of what I do is, I mean, sometimes I just do make initiatives. I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. You know, forget this, forget that. Let me just go forward, you know, feel the energy of space, and then just move right on in and doing what I need to do. Now, when it comes to, like if I see, you know, a good-looking dude or whatever, and trying to talk, like, that doesn't always happen. Like, I don't. Because, you know what, I'm always like, okay, does he have somebody, or is it, you know, like, what are my chances? Right. And I think for me, that becomes, like, you know, I'm like, I don't know if I take no in the best way. You know, I can be a little persistent, you know. And some people, you know, they're very, you know, some dudes, I don't know. Like you say, you know, I don't know. I don't know what happens. It either, I'm like, I know I can come on strong sometimes. You know, I don't get aggressive. I don't hold anybody at gunpoint or anything like that. I just like to say, hey, how are you? You know, but sometimes that might not happen, and I don't know, dudes these days, they just act like they're scared, so I don't worry about it anymore. I just continue being friendly with people, you know, and I get over it, and that's what helps me, you know.
This single stuff is different.
Huh?
I said, this single life is different. It's very different.
Very different. I tell all the married people, don't leave your husbands or wives.
Work it out.
That you already got a side piece waiting.
Whoa.
It's mean in these streets. I'm serious. Unless you already got a side. It's like a job. Don't leave your job unless you already know you got another one waiting. unless your hustle is on point. If it ain't, don't go out here. It's mean in these streets. You gonna be unemployed for a minute.
So let me ask you this, because
being
able to build your confidence to not just become a dancer, because you've been dancing over 20 years, so being able to build your confidence to transition into becoming a director of plays and a choreographer, because those are two other steps, and you know, with you as a total artist. And so how did you become a director? And I know you do plays and things with the Midtown Art SoMo Playhouse. So how did you become a director, and was working with the Midtown Art SoMo Playhouse your first time directing, or did you come in with some experience?
Well, as a director, I would say that I've had my experience in creating or directing in a way more in the area of dance, and more in a way of carrying out a storyline throughout a production. So I had already had experience in doing that and collaborating. There was a show we did with Black on Black Rhyme back in the early 2000s, and we combined, you know, our dance work with the poetry. And we kind of let that be something like a mosaic, you know, to flow from one script to another. So that was probably my first time in creating something that would have been more of a like a directive-oriented production. And then actually for it to be like totally scripted, yeah, it was definitely working with the theater, with SoMo Playhouse. Because again, from that point on, from the early 2000s onward, it had been mainly with dance oriented shows. There was some scripting. I had always been writing since I was young. Poetry, scripts. I grew up a Jehovah's Witness, and in that we did these skits that we had to do for like the they had a theocratic school, and that's what we would do, these skits. And so when I learned how to write that, I was in middle school creating, you know, doing my own for the people who were with me and writing for them, and, you know, and going forth with that and making that creative or whatever at that time. And so I think once I got, you know, that became a regular thing. And then I think it was more so when I started working with SoMo Playhouse, there was more of an opportunity to really just be strictly directing, you know, working with scripts and rewriting. I mean, not rewriting, but actually going through an actual script and editing it for a production, you know, and setting it up for that. And so, yes. That was the first time. It was a great experience. It actually came, it helped me to really see how similar it was to choreographing my bachelor's degree is in architecture. So that is also about a lot of structuring, putting things together. So everything that I do so far, just to say that everything I've done so far or do in that area has been about structuring, putting things together, production, layering, and directing is pretty much the same, falls under the same fold of work.
Right.
So it becomes natural, you know,
right.
almost effortless. Because it's fun, so, you know.
So with this, it was, like you said, more the structure than when you were helping with the dance. With dance aspect, with this more of the script and the structure and the actors and making sure everybody's on point with that, because I know that's a whole lot to do, especially when you're directing and getting personality together, making sure people have their stuff together, because at the end of the day, you're the director.
Yeah. So it's, you know, in terms of lines and, you know, actually, this is, that's not, well, okay, yes, it is. I'll give it credit for it being that. In terms of lines, working with lines, and then, and this was into Zaki Sanjay's For Colored Girls. So we're also, there is, it's a choreo poem, and there is dancing involved. There was music involved. Because of certain copyright issues, I actually created some of that music. I had Vonzell. What's Vonzell's last name? Well, I cannot think of it.
Because he goes by Vonzell Deshaun so much, you forget his last name.
Yeah, Vonzell Deshaun. But Vonzell was the music director, and we worked together. And he helped me, you know, really shape and fine line a lot of the music that we put together for the play. You know, it was a lot of, some of it, yeah, it was definitely some organic making happening with us, myself, putting those things together. And then also I encourage incorporation from the cast, you know, to really help in creating some of the work, which is part of what I like to do. I like to let people know that, you know, you're a part of this, you're an artist too, you're a collaborator, and you can invest some of this in here too, to leave your impression, your footprint.
Okay. And so this experience, how did this lead you into, because I had the chance to see the play Women Warriors, so how did this lead to you becoming a part of Women Warriors, and how involved were you in the process, or what different aspects did you play in making sure that production of Women Warriors went on? And it was an excellent play as well.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad you came and got a chance to see it. I was co-director for Women Warriors. E. Marie Sissel was the original writer and director for setting up some of the scripts, because those scripts actually came from, some of them came from actual stories, and then some of them came from from other dialogues. And so my co-directing dealt a lot with the cast, working with the cast in character development, and definitely strengthening them to really bring to life what these characters that they had, you know, to have them really embody them. And I think one of the most beautiful things when it comes to working with a cast of people is that you have so many, especially in the community, you have people from many different walks of life. You have some who are experienced, and you have some who are brand new. And I think the magic comes in when you're able to help each and every one of them tap into an area that they have not been able to tap into. And so a lot of my work that I like to do is assist them in identifying those areas, and then allow them to give life to it and bring it to the stage, you know. So no matter what the art is, the art form in performing arts that I go into, one of the main things that I look and focus on is bringing out these strengths or hidden talents that are within a lot of our cast members and allow them to incorporate that into the performing.
Booyah, Joe.
I knew it. I know, right? But, you know, I had to put that fastball down there. But I do want to, you know, your cast, I thought your cast did an excellent job of bringing you guys' scripts to life and your ideas to life. Because, you know, Rashida, we know Pat and I, we know Rashida Marshall. So she was in there. So she surprised me with her. Because she, you know, she real shy. She's extra shy. You got to pull it out of her. So she, I was very surprised by her performance. So I knew you guys do a good job of motivating people, because the person she was that she was, that's not Rashida. And she was somebody else, and that leg was she was in there.
Yes.
I'm like, look at her showing emotion.
Huh?
Showing
emotions. I was just like, look at her showing emotions, because I never seen her show emotions like that.
Well, you know, I think her emotion is very, you know, it's a very, you know, very reserved place. And, but she has a lot of emotion. In fact, she's filled with emotions in different ways. And a lot of the work was about allowing her to tap into it. So me and Rashida, we definitely like to laugh together. I know that's one thing, like, I can tell you. Like, I can be silly around Rashida, and it's totally fine because it helps. Because she's, like, very receptive towards it, and it allows us to really, like, you know, just really have good conversations. So in terms of the work and the character development, it's definitely, like, she was very open, very creative, and being open to just really pushing herself, you know, pushing the envelope. Pam, what's Pam's last name? Pamela Bell. She was actually one of our other actresses, a little more older. She was a tall lady played. She played in one of the last skits that we had in the play, and Miss Pam is very loud, very out there, in your face. her, you know, very strong personality, just really, you know, she's really caring. and yet, you know, it's, you know, and in the process of working with her, it was a lot of, you know, we had our challenges because it was like, okay, how do we tell Miss Pam that we need her to do this or do that, you know, and allowing her to get and tap into those points, you know, because she, well, y'all know I'm already at this point, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, no, Miss Pam, we need you to come here, you know, and we brought you over here, but our apologies, we need this, well, a little more of this. How do we, you know, and learning to work, you know, with that type of personality as well. I mean, various. And it's always like that especially in community theater. You have so many personalities that you're working with, and the challenge is how do we find the common, not really a common ground, but the ground that balances out between everybody there in terms of getting that production done that becomes a mutual ground for everyone to meet at. You know. In terms of, you know, for me, it's always the same challenge, no matter if it's dance or acting. I'm mainly dealing, you know, looking at those challenges, and I'm always finding ways and excited about the innovative ways I can find to get people seeing it from a different direction, getting them motivated to do more, you know, and getting them to move outside of their own boxes and their own reserved places.
So I don't fully understand what Women Warriors was about because I didn't see it.
Okay. Oh, you didn't see it. Okay, so I'm glad you asked. So Women Warriors, it was a play about women who and their stories of abuse. And so the abuse wasn't just about, you know, domestic abuse. We wanted to make sure that our audience knew that we recognize that there's so many levels and so many exhibits of abuse that happen in this world and between in relationships. You know, beyond physical abuse, we know the sexual assault and abuse, you know, that form of abuse, but we also know about financial abuse, emotional abuse, mental abuse. You know, these are different areas of where you know, women deal with, or men, it's not just women, but that the abuse forms manipulation with partners. There's a taking advantage of, whether it's to take advantage of money, take advantage of a person's abilities and skills, take advantage of assets of what a person has, like living in their house and draining them in that way. And then the mental abuse, you know, manipulating a person to think a certain way about themselves, lower than what they are, or expecting a certain type of treatment that might be a bit grandiose or outweighing a relationship, you know, as far as, you know, definitely it happens in certain areas where there's misogyny or some form of sexism where there's a gender role or gender superficiality. Someone thinking that, you know, because they're this gender, you need to treat them like this and that and that and that. And I say it like that because it happens on both sides. Or it happens even in same-sex couples, where, you know, it's just certain continuous things that can break down the human psyche and the spirit of a person. And so Women Warriors was that tribute to those who have moved beyond even surviving it and being themselves, being warriors, being ones who are able to tell their stories, and live, you know, live and celebrate themselves. And so we started out with the stories and the first act where you hear the narration of different stories that have happened. Some of them were based on true stories. And then we ended it with the group coming together as if they're in a support group and they're having conversations about what's going on and being supportive of each other. You know, and we wanted that as organically as possible. So it changed every night. Every night we had a show. It was different. There were different conversations that were coming up, and, you know, the cast would talk, you know, and enjoy themselves. And it really brought them together in different ways because some of them had actually went through certain situations, you know. So... yeah, so that was basically the gist of how we did Women Warriors. And we had many of the advocates and support groups that are local to the Tallahassee area. The Florida Advocates for Domestic Violence, we had supporters there. We had the Refuge Child Supporters, Oasis Center for Women and Girls. And that's just to name a few that we reached out to invite to come and see a pre-screening of the show. And then after that, they continued to come because we wanted professional support available in case anything triggered any of our audiences, and they knew they could reach out to anybody there. Right. And then we also provided hotline support numbers in these little conspicuous places in case someone didn't want to grab one right out. If they were in the bathroom, they could get one. If they were somewhere else, they could just grab one. Like, it wasn't in your face. So we really wanted to make sure that we were, you know, giving attention to this issue and then letting the community know, you know, that the arts isn't just about entertaining you, but it's also about supporting you and helping you in issues that we don't necessarily always get a chance to talk about. Right. You know, so, yeah.
Any plans to take that on the road, like, say, come here to Charlotte?
Well, for Women Warriors, we're actually in a new... So let me tell you something about SOMO. So SOMO Playhouse is right now, we've been on a sabbatical for a minute. What has given birth at the moment is the Fridgetown Coalition for the Arts, and that was a program that's been conceived by Renee Matthews Jackson, and she's also a part of the Somo Playhouse. So what we've been able to do is we said, okay, we like what you're doing, and we want to actually support you in this area of the work. So we actually have been collaborating with the Frenchtown Coalition of the Arts in order to get ready to produce newer works that will still be in this area of women warriors and plus much more. Now, with For Color Girls, we did tour a couple places in Florida, and we with the intention to, you know, visit a couple more areas. A lot of times with community organizations, one of the challenges we deal with is scheduling, and everyone is busy. Mm-hmm. Everyone is busy because we have so many talented people apart who aren't just only, you know, performers, but they wear many other hats. Right. So a lot of times the touring becomes something that we have to really, really sketch out a full line plan way ahead of time, especially when we know that we'll be able to do that. And so saying all that to say that's in the works for future work, and definitely with this new organization that's happening in Frenchtown. It's really, really, really exciting. You guys should definitely check that out with Frenchtown Coalition of the Arts.
I definitely will. I
and even participate.
Cool because, yes, that's what I'm saying. I think it's cool because, you know, growing up here in Tallahassee, the thought of theater never crossed my mind outside of the Charles mm-hmm. Winterwood Theater on FAMU campus. So my mindset was you have to be an adult and go to FAMU to get into plays and things outside of like your little school plays. But then, you know, mm-hmm. finding out about the theater that they have on Thomasville Road and the little all the plays and things that they've been putting on forever. But we on the south side, so we had no mm-hmm. idea. So that's why I appreciate you and everybody else, you, Ms. Cecil, and everybody else who put the time in to create these things for the arts, for the young black mm-hmm. kids or the other kids who are on the south side who have no idea of what's going on the north side, can't get to it, but you can still be able to get into the arts and don't have to just think that this is something I can't do. It's attainable because you have it right here in your community. So I definitely mm-hmm. appreciate you all having that available.
Thank you.
Yeah, I didn't see my first play until I left Tallahassee.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I didn't even know they had stuff like that going on until, like I said.
And you know, it's,
go ahead.
Yeah, keep.
No, go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying it's just crazy how that happens because, again. And I tell people, especially like when I'm in other places, you know, and my friends who grown up in larger cities, you know, Chicago or New York or L.A. or D.C., I'm always telling them, I'm like, look, you guys were in areas where culture in the community was a little bit more established, you know.
Right.
Growing up where I grew up at, we did not have... Like, there wasn't a dance class going on at Day Street that I could go to. You know, not like right there, not happening every afternoon or something like that, not even happening at my elementary school, you know. So I had to really dig for a lot of stuff. I had to dig and hold on to it and cherish it and say, one day I'll have access to it, you know. And I wanted something for me as a black girl. You know, I appreciated ballet and different things like that. But I always felt like there was something different that could attach me more to it than what I saw, you know, with non-black or, you know, with white people who were dancing, white ballet dancers or those white jazz dancers. You know, all of these different types of dancers, I'm like, okay, their bodies are different than mine.
Right.
No matter what I wanted to think or look, I just said, their body is different, and that, and there's a different way of moving. So how do I do that? How do I fix and adapt my body? You know, am I supposed to? You know, like those were the questions I was having. And again, I didn't get access to even knowing how to do that on this end near Frenchtown area, because we didn't have it. Southside, you guys were starting to get more stuff. You were getting, you had more access to a couple more things than we did. But on my side of town, we didn't. There was none of that. There was none of that, you know. So I think it's important to know, and for me, it was important for me to, as a community activist, to really go out and share that once I had it in my body, once I knew how to dance, that I would go and work in these community centers. And I was looking for that, and the blessing came through a lady by the name of Sharika Duncan, and actually with Keith Rogers, because he called me one day, and this was right. When he had a good store, old. And he said, hey, he said, Teresa, I got this woman, she's trying to start a dance group, and she wants to get it together, and I thought of you, and I think you'll be able to help her, blah, 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 and it was Sharika Duncan, so we talked. And I said, yeah, I can help you. You know, I told her, I said, I was just getting ready to start my own nonprofit. And she's like, well, I already got one established. I just need, you know, I just need it built up and developed into the actual dance program. And so I would go to Madison County every weekend, and I would work with the children there. And then we began at the Smith Williams Center at Walker Ford, and I began working with the children there as well. And we did our first concert at the North Florida College in Madison.
Okay.
And that was, like, really cool. And then after that, we just kept going, you know, just working with her. I definitely enjoy being able to work with so many students throughout the community and in the community centers and really connecting with the, you know, these community directors and letting them know, you know, dance is an important part of student enrichment at your centers, and I think you need to see how you can make that happen more often, you know. So, yeah, definitely I did it with Day Street, with Mr. Greg Grady, Mr. Grady. He, Reginald Grady, I'm sorry, got his name wrong for a minute. So he... You know, he got these girls together, and at the time I would go out there to them, and I let them know, look, you know, I'm here to teach you guys different ways of dancing, blah, 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 this and that. And, you know, I had a large group, and then it dwindled, because you know how that happens from time to time when they don't see what they want. But I had a nice group of girls. I would say somewhere between 5 to 10 at a time or in different intervals. And they were really, really invested in the work, you know. And it was just great to work with them and let them have the experience. So they could not say that they never had an experience of learning dance on a, you know,
right.
technical level, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
So I wanna ask you these questions. I'm going to kind of combine them because we'll have you on this line talking all night. But Samba in the Streets. You were able to be a guest performer with Samba in the Streets, and you are a part of the Yemaya Dance Collective. So could you kind of tell us what both of those are and how you became a part of them?
Okay. Well, I'll start with Yemwa. Yemwa is a group I created back in 2007. It was originally Yemwa Dance Company, and then I later created it to be Yemwa Dance Art, Yemwa Arts Collective. And basically, Yemwa was because of a lot of the dancers I was dancing with, we would perform regularly at many different areas and places. And I said, okay, well, let me just create a group that we represent, you know, when we go from place to place. Yemwa is a Guinean Susu for dragonfly. And I wanted to use that representation because of the idea of creating a company that was adaptable and flexible in the ways that it allowed itself to be sustainable and be, you know, around throughout, you know, time and years. And then also, the idea of making it an innovative hub for artists, that is not just dancers, you know, you're following what I want to choreograph, but we all work together to create work. This is your space to create work with. So that was Yemwa. And that is Yemwa. The Samba in the Streets is a community initiative created by Dr. Linda Udine, who is the executive director. Not executive director. She's the founder of Vivia Brazil in L.A. So this is a dance company out of L.A. And I met Dr. Udine back in the early 2000s when we were doing a Brazilian, Afro-Brazilian connection here in Tallahassee. And she brought a lot of the artists down. She's an ethnographer. She lived in Brazil for quite a long time and actually danced with one of the national folkloric companies down there. So I got to know many of the artists and Dr. Joan Burroughs, she calls me up and she says, hey, you know, the company is here, and Linda would really like to see you. Why don't you come and participate? We'll be here for about like 3.5 weeks in Alabama. I said, oh, great, great, great. I said, well, yeah, I would love to do that. I want to take classes. I want to do this and that. And so I went and I got to and basically through the work of Dr. Joan Burroughs, she's a very incredible person. she was able to assist the company Viva Brazil in grant monies, you know, different channels of financial support to do a statewide initiative throughout Alabama. And so this was Samba in the Streets, bringing together arts and music and dance and to bring together the community, the communities of Alabama. And we end it, it was like 2 weeks long of drum workshops, dance workshops, and performances in Birmingham, Montgomery, Alabama, Selma, and then some smaller towns right near Refuge City, I think it was called. It was the area where a lot of the who was living back there. I think there was like, it was like a town called Refuge City, or it was known as that, but it's like the backwoods of Alabama. So we were in some of the most hidden parts I've never seen of Alabama, you know.
Movies.
I think, yeah, let me tell you, one of the most beautiful moments was they do the walk to Selma every year. And the politicians and stuff, they do this whole, they start in Nashville and they ride all the way and walk and ride and walk all the way till they get to Selma, Alabama. And so what we did is that they wanted us along the lines with the legendary footwalkers. So there were people, I'm ashamed to even tell you that I don't remember all of the names, but I know in particular... So Coretta Scott King's sister got lost in the crowd, and we were towards the front. And so she didn't know where she was going, and so I came to her, and I remember being introduced to her, and I was like, I said, oh, Lord, I said, they done lost me because it was a big crowd. And so I had to walk her all the way up to the front, you know, make sure she got to the front. I felt like her bodyguard. I was like, no one near her. Everyone back out the way. Coming through. And I had a big drum. I had a big drum looked around me because, you know, I'm ambitious like that. I'm like, you guys give me the biggest drum. I'm gonna make some sound walking all the way crossing the Selma Bridge. So we got her up to the front. You know, we were with the legendary Footwalkers. And to play and dance crossing that bridge, you know, usually they just sing the songs, you know, ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, like all of that. But we were playing, so the type of music we were playing was Bloco Afro, which is a genre in Brazil that was played for, this emerged from the era of Black consciousness in Brazil.
Right.
And so Bloco Afro was this type of sound and dance that that was being, you know, performed in Brazil, gave a, you know, added to the identity of Brazilian Blackness, you know, awesome work. Like, just it's a beautiful sound. And that's what you heard as we walked from the church all the way over to the other side of that bridge. I know it was like 3-4 miles. You know, it was beautiful. It was like it added a whole different presence to that because now you had like a second line just looked like, you know, a second line parade coming over that bridge. And celebrating these ancestors, these freedom fighters, you know, those who are alive and those who are past, and we're doing that even with a whole nother, you know, cultural essence being added to it, but it's still rhythm. Still sound and still Blackness, you know what I'm saying?
That's cool.
So it was just really, really, that was a really powerful, powerful event to participate in and be a part of. And it was also documented. So they were able to have videographers there because they were doing a documentary about Samba in the Streets. And it was exciting. It was exciting. I was there when the conversation happened. We were in Miami. And it was like, hey, why don't we do Samba in the Streets in Alabama? Mm-hmm. And, you know, Dr. Burroughs was like, yeah, that'd be a great idea. And, you know, with Linda, Dr. Eugene, she's very, her thing is she's a go-getter. And that was the other thing. She's a mentor of mine, too. So with a lot of the mentors, they're just go-getters. These women, they say they want something, they're going to do it. You know, and so being around that, I say, you know what? I can't be sitting around here saying I think I'm going to do it or I don't know or I'm going to try. No, I have to be ambitious about what I want and go for it, you know, because this is what I'm being taught. This is what the universe is putting in front of me, you know. That's what I do. And, you know, just to let you also, like, just to add, so when it comes to, even when I talk about when people and those who are become dancers who are wanting to take the professional route, different things like that, when they're wanting to learn about lessons about the professional field, that's one of the things I learned. And it comes together about having to act, and that's the acronym, because ACT is about ambition. It's about consistency, and it's about tenacity. And so having these key elements together, you know, is what pushes you to make your vision a reality. You know what I'm saying? And bringing together that mold of fantasy into the reality, letting them blend together so that that is what you want is there for you, you know, and not just a dream, not just something you wish, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Sure. Manifest the reality. you've had a journey that has really taught you a lot over the years, and you've seen a lot. I've been exposed to a lot of different cultures, different people, different styles of art, because you mentioned, you know, studying architecture. So you've always had the artistic soul, the artistic mind, and this view of the world. So I just think it's pretty cool because everything is coming full circle, and you're able to use all your aspects of art that you've learned, that you love, into doing what you're doing now, and making a living doing what you want to do and doing what makes you happy.
Exactly. And I've told people that, too, about doing what makes them happy. And I was in a point where I was scared to do that. I've missed opportunities, you know. It's a vulnerable point to explain. I've missed opportunities, really good opportunities, to do things and be out there. A part of being afraid of what it was going to be and what if I don't make it, what if this doesn't happen. And then the universe was like, you know, at some point you're going to have to deal with this. And it put me there. Put me in a place where I had to risk the things I needed to do to make my life better. Mm-hmm. Because I know what I want to do. I'm not, right. I know I was an artist. I know this is what I want to do. And I'm doing everything else but that because I was afraid. And so, you know, when it came to, I jumped. And I'm like, I'm okay. Everything is good, you know. It's like, I'm glad I jumped. Because now I get to know what it means to jump, you know, and run. Yeah, run with it, exactly.
Right.
Yep.
Right. All right. So now I really love your story. I really love what you're saying. You're just awesome. That's what's up. I'm glad we got you on. That's what's up. I hear what you're saying. So we're down to our final question, and you've been on this long enough, so you know Patrick. He's special. So,
hey.
Is he with us still, Patrick?
I'm here.
Okay.
Joe always talks about my mama.
Man, nobody said nothing about your mama, dog.
Yeah, you did. I heard you.
No, we say Happy Mother's Day to her.
See.
Happy Mother's Day.
Yeah.
So, pick that up quick, so right?
This is Pat's question, so he's special, so we got to set him up a little bit, make him feel good about his question.
Oh.
So. Don't lie. So.
Okay.
If you were the all-powerful, all-able, all-encompassing ruler, goddess of the black community, what would you change and what would your message to the people be?
So just to let you know, I am the all-powerful, all-ruling,
I got you.
All-encompassing goddess of the world. You know,
that's what's up.
Of a world and the world, however you want to frame that. And I am a part of the greater all-encompassing power. So I see that anything that I do towards the community is always not just helping that community, but helping all communities. Because it's the drop that causes the ripple in the water. And that expands to everywhere. So I've always been a full supporter of seeds, planting seeds, right? And I say, you know, I've taught so many children here and there and everywhere that anything that I have said, I have planted a seed everywhere I've gone. You can't tell me there's not one place I have not planted a good seed that has grown. You know, and so in the communities, I continue to affirm that anywhere that I do in the work that I do, that I'm constantly planting seeds among all types of soil. It doesn't have to be new and fresh like young ones. It could be old, you know, but it's still an impression. It's still something that can grow. That person continues to carry and be able to learn and help others with. That's all I want to do, you know. That's all. That's one of the main things that I like to do, and not just here, but across everywhere, traveling and doing it, going to other communities, working with other people, You know, I love doing it. I love working with those in so many different backgrounds, professional and beginners. Everyone, in my opinion, is an artist in their own way. So that's my spiel. Spiel on that. You may all
that.
Say thank you, Queen. I'm ready.
Thank you,
thank
Empress
you, Queen.
Of the world.
Goddess of the universe.
For allowing us to speak to you.
You're welcome. Thank you all for allowing, for providing the opportunity to speak.
No problem. But before we go, tell people where they can connect with you, social media, websites, emails, blogs, podcasts, whatever you have. How can they find you and connect with you and support you?
Okay, cool. At the moment, you can plug into Instagram. I will start providing more information for people there. You're more than welcome to direct mail me and say, hey, can you post some of this and that, or, you know, whatever you want to ask me, you know, I can. I'm hopefully I can answer it. UCTRICE81, and that's my Instagram feeder. And then Facebook is Giltrecia Head. So it's my name, and all you have to do is open that up, and I'm on Facebook. Reach out to me through there. You'll probably see my name in other areas, YouTube, or, and then we will probably have a website starting for the Frenchtown Coalition of the Arts, so you'll probably begin to see more of my face on that. I'm coming up with my own website soon, so just be on the lookout, but for now, yeah, those are the areas to reach me at.
Joe's going to be able to help you with the website thing, right,
Joseph?
Yeah,
I was just about to say that. Yeah, we got website service, so we can help you with your website.
That's what I'm talking about. That is exactly what I'm talking about.
Yes, ma'am.
Great. One time for my black man.
Yes, ma'am.
G as in girl, ILT as in Tom, RE, C as in cat, IA, and the last name is head, like head on a body.
There you go.
Yep.
So, if you don't know about that, because she spelled it out for you, if you kind of was in the back of the class, we'll help you out. We'll help you out, but make sure you support her.
Yeah, help them out.
but we definitely appreciate you spending time with us, because you didn't have to. But you chose to spend time with us, and so we can learn more about you, so we can help put your information out, put your platform out more. That's what we like to do with this. So definitely thank you for giving up your time for being here with us today. And we
thank
appreciate
you.
We enjoyed learning about you and learning from you, and getting it more exposed to the world of dance, choreography, and directing in the arts as well. So. Thank you. We definitely look forward to having you back on here in the future.
Yeah. Anytime, hit me up if I'm available.
Yes, ma'am. So we're going to go ahead and let you go, and we will definitely talk to you later.
All right.
Yes, ma'am. See you later.
All right.
All right, bye-bye. So, Ms. Giltrecia Head, y'all make sure y'all support her. She does a lot of great things in this Tallahassee community. And, we about to go ahead and end this thing. We do want to say to all our mothers out there who are holding it down, we know coming up for Mother's Day weekend, so happy Mother's Day to you all, especially the women in our community who are doing an excellent job being mothers to their children, other people's children, and just putting the work in to make sure our community is better. Thank you for all the contributions that you've done, that you put in. So shout out to the mothers out there. Shout out to my moms, Pat moms, everybody moms who've been holding it down and making sure our community can move forward. So with that being said, remember to support the Fix Sports Podcast. Lessons from the Screen. Just support both of them on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/thefix or patreon.com/LFTS, Lessons from the Screen. So you can do that. You know, visit our website, www.freedomtrainradio.com. If you need a website built, make sure you visit www.pitwebdesign.com, and we'll take care of your web design needs. So with that being said, Pat, what's your parting shot, my brother?
Power to the people.
Power to the people, power to the people, power to the people. Two fingers in the air like a player, because we just don't care, and we up out of here. Peace.